The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic. Coming up today, we'll digest one of the most dramatic weeks in football's history as plans for a breakaway Super League were unveiled and then unravelled within 48 hours as all six English clubs withdrew. Liverpool owner John W. Henry has apologised to fans. Manchester United announced that their executive vice chairman, Ed Woodward, will be standing down at the end of the year. So today we're joined by Peter Kenyon, former chief executive of both Manchester United and Chelsea, two clubs that on Sunday had announced they were part of the Super League plot, of course. And we'll also get the thoughts of Keith Wyness, former chief exec at Everton and Aston Villa, to get his thoughts on the day the Super League collapsed. And we'll look at what comes next. This is the Business of Sport from The Athletic. I think, Matt, the most important thing to say, first of all, is that this is being recorded Wednesday morning at 9:05, because who knows what might happen at Wednesday morning, come 11:05 even, let alone later on this afternoon and this evening. So as things stand now, all English clubs are out of it. Inter Milan are out of it. That's all we've heard so far.
Yeah, and I'm glad you reminded me of the time. It's been quite a 72 hours. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I don't really know where to start. The football world's been turned upside down about three times. 12 of the richest, most successful, most popular sports teams in the entire world have humiliated themselves with their greed, arrogance, selfishness. And yet, as I imagine we're going to get into over the next few minutes, are going to come out of this okay. Yeah, they've got some apologies to make. I imagine they've got some expensive penalty clauses to pay and some, lawyers' bills to sort out. But they're going to get, as they have been getting for the last 30, 40 years, a bigger, more lucrative Champions League, more places, a backdoor in. I think they're going to get a partnership with UEFA. I think they're going to get a bigger say in matters going forward. I'll be intrigued to see how the Premier League goes, because I think the Premier League is a slightly different argument. But I think the big clubs are going to get pretty much everything, well, almost everything they wanted out of UEFA. How they say sorry to us, to some sponsors, I think the sponsors will be okay, broadcasters. These relationships will have to be repaired. But nothing surprises me in football. Despite everything that's happened, and so much has happened, they're going to come out of this okay. I'm sorry to say, unless you're a fan of one of these clubs.
Well, do you know what? Even if you are a fan of one of these clubs, you might not want them to come out of it okay. To be fair to a lot of fans of these clubs who are incredibly angry at them and disappointed with them. Let's talk to Peter Kenyon, former CEO of both Chelsea and Manchester United, obviously two of the clubs involved. Peter, you've also been involved in other takeovers as an advisor, and you know how owners work, you know how boardrooms work. First of all, is there any part of you that's surprised that they thought they could have got away with this?
No, I mean, I'm surprised. There are some smart people in those clubs, and they're not all distant American owners. There's a lot of knowledge within a lot of those clubs as well. And look, this is nothing new, is it? I was involved in 98. I was on the board and led a group called G14. But times were different and the objectives were different. That was a time when, as a football club competing in Champions League, you couldn't have a relationship, a direct conversation even with UEFA, right? The discussion had to go through the FA. So we're playing in an environment and playing in competitions that we got no input or say or anything directly with the competition organisers. That was one issue. The second issue was the revenue share at that point was 50%, right? So, and this is a club competition, and I think it's developed into the best club competition in the world. So we are in danger of making something that's very successful unsuccessful.
Can I ask you why you think it is the best club competition in the world. What for you as a football executive makes a good competition?
Okay.
And I wonder whether that is different to me as a fan, what makes a good competition?
First of all, you know, football is a pyramid. Football is about aspiration. And whatever club you have, if you've experienced any European night at any level, it's different than your normal league game. And that's not taking anything away from what I think is the best league in the world called the Premier League, right? So the dynamics are different. The reasons of the success are different. But I tell you now, anybody who's been to a European game on a Wednesday night, whether that's abroad or at your home game, it's different. The atmosphere is different. It's a sense of occasion. You know, and part of what I've always said is nobody wants to play Barcelona 8 times a year and Bayern Munich. That's not what football's about, right? So I don't think that these breakaway fixed things work even from anybody's perspective. I mean, I've been involved with clubs where actually, you know, we got, for odd reasons, you know, United got drawn against Bayern Munich every year for a period of time. And it's not the same. It isn't the same. It's not the same fan experience, you know. You travel with fans. They're away for 2 days. It's a mini holiday. And the crescendo of that is watching your team at some of the biggest grounds in the world and a fantastic experience. That's what you're messing around with here. And that's not what makes the sport. What's the point in the Premier League if merit doesn't get you to that place? That's what we all play to win the game. And then if you win enough games, you win the league. And then if you win the league or you're in that group that qualified for Europe, it's another kick on. That's the journey. That's the romance. If you do it once, you remember it forever. And if you do it multitude of times, you still have great experiences. So whilst I'm out of run clubs and they're still involved with clubs, the romance of it doesn't change. It's brilliant going to a new country with a new club. Now, you know, and again, what's ironic to me is the timing of this when you see the development of the way that the Champions League has moved and morphed. And the clubs have been involved in that. Going back, you know, the successes we had around the initial 98, you know, G14 group was we got 72 to 84% of the revenue going back to the clubs, which was fantastic. We got a say in the competition by having a direct relationship with UEFA and then FIFA. And we got represented on all the key committees, the competitions committee, the strategic committee, the medical committees. The clubs became involved in something that you had a say in your future. And what the biggest issue to me of this is we seem to have either forgotten that or discarded it completely. We have to rebuild. You know, look, the Premier League without the top six isn't the Premier League. So we've got to rebuild those relationships.
Can I just ask you one thing on that revenue?
Yeah.
When you talked about 72 to 84% coming back, is that to all clubs?
That was to all
clubs. To all clubs, right.
So the original G14 group were never... They were the leaders of the campaign. They were in fact, they were chosen because those were the only clubs initially who had won a Champions League, right?
Yeah.
And in 98, there was only 14 clubs who'd won a Champions League, right? And there's still not that many. So it's still an incredible competition to win. And look at where we are as England, you know, in terms of the teams that are represented and where we're at. It's like, you know, that's what's upsetting.
Matt?
Yeah, I think, Peter, it's really interesting that you've brought it back to the G14, because G14, of course, as part of that peace deal, became the European Club Association. And it's the European Club Association that have formed, certainly to my perspective, a really good working relationship with UEFA over the last decade or so. And that was the sort of choreographed, the next iteration, because things, I think many people in football, I know some fans don't like this, and I think we're going to have a lot of conversation around this in the next few weeks. Things do change, formats change, things, you know, that's not a problem. So we're going to now have a big debate again, I think, about the proposed changes. Well, they're not proposed anymore. They've gone through for the Champions League and Europa League and the Europa Conference League. But that has happened as a result, as you say, of the G14 becoming the European Club Association, everyone in the tent, everyone having a say. What stuns me, Peter, and you have been this person. I know it's not you now, but you've been in this room, this seat. Why isn't this not enough? You know, Seferin, the boss of UEFA, thought he had a deal on Saturday. 2 years in the making. You know, a little tweak to basically the structure you've just explained. Seats on all the key committees, a genuine revenue sharing agreement, more places, an interesting new format that we can take to the market. Why wasn't that enough?
I think the other significant change is the amount of foreign ownership. And not all foreign ownership's the same, right? So foreign ownership is not bad because it's foreign, but there's no doubt about it that we've been, in my opinion, over-influenced by moving from a merit base to a franchise model, right? And there has not been enough detractors in that discussion to say, guys, you're messing, you're fiddling with the wrong issues here. I don't have a problem with a club who brings more value to the rest, wanting more than the rest. That's a discussion point. Everybody's got to work out the merits of that. What I have a real problem with is football is not a franchise. Football is a merit-based sport. And there are too many people around the table now, too many people who don't understand that. And they're frightened to death of relegation. Well, you know what? Do a better job. Do a better job. Get better people in. Because nothing should be guaranteed in that sense.
Peter, that's really interesting that you've gone there with that, because I think you're right. So the narrative for our listeners over the last few weeks is that this negotiation with UEFA was starting to break down, not really around the format. The format was kind of agreed. The clubs had kind of got what they wanted, the bigger tournament, the more places, the back door in, all of that. That it was around sort of control of this joint venture, that the selling of the Champions League would become a genuine joint venture. And then who would have like the kind of casting vote? Who would have the veto? And UEFA not wanting to give that up for understandable reasons, because then what would UEFA be for? But I think you're right. I think that this is actually about relegation. It's actually about that. Well, guys, we are the biggest. We bring the biggest audiences. We should be there. It is the replication of the NFL, the NBA. It's what they have at home. A lack of jeopardy that we talk about almost every week on this podcast. And you, Peter, it's really refreshing to hear you talk about Europe being different. That's the whole point. And you earn it. I think some of these clubs think that they earn it because they've invested in these clubs. Some of these owners, they've earned it because they've bought into the system in the way they buy into a system in the States.
And from a business perspective, the certainty of taking away relegation is a huge multiplier to value. That's like any business, right? So we're no different. So let's understand that. That's not a problem. Let's understand that. But would we then go to the next stage of moving a club because it's got a bigger fan base somewhere else? No, we wouldn't. You're talking about cultural, fundamental sport principles based around merit or franchise. And so that's one big issue. And the other big issue that we've had is absent owners who don't feel, you know, and everybody can say that, well, there's only a small percentage of our fan base who get to see the game. That's true, okay? But it's an important part of the fan base. Football is still, whether you're big or small club, it's still a huge part of the history and community of what created you in the first place. You can't just rip up history, right? And you shouldn't, because that is actually what's grown your fan base to be bigger than what goes around the club, right? And it's that understanding and it's that relationship. And look, you know, I've had enough criticism in my working career saying that, you know, I was looking after, yeah, I'm going to look after my club. Yes, I'm going to try and not leave a penny on the table. But what we never did is prostitute our principles at the expense of everybody. You know, one of the massive successes of the Premier League was the founder members agreement. I've stood up against other clubs and saying, the minute you fiddle with that, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're opening up. So don't open it up. And there's a sense of this. I've been an advocate and still are, that we shouldn't have an independent regulator. We should regulate ourselves. We should be big enough to regulate ourselves. That discussion has now just been thrown open to the wind. And guess what? If an independent regulator comes in, I don't think it's right for the sport, but I'll tell you, they'd be the biggest sufferers of that. It'll be the big clubs.
In what way? Sorry. In what way?
Effectively, regulation is about driving more equality, yeah. Right? So in some ways, you're forcing measures again on things that should be merit-based. Hmm. You know, Man United have got the biggest revenues. They haven't been the most successful club in the last 10 years. So, you know, I'm sick of people saying, oh, it's all money-related. Well, I don't think you can do it without money, but it ain't just about money. The path of club football is littered with people who've had loads of money and no success. So get your house in order. Run yourself better. It's ridiculous that we're thinking that some of the clubs that are included in this are sitting in seventh and ninth place and feel as though, you know, they should be included in a big club. Who says you're a big club?
Well, exactly. Just from the regulation point of view, that's fine if you don't run your club well as Manchester United, but you have a lot of money and finish ninth because your club survives. Lower down the pyramid, and we've talked about the pyramid here, Peter, if your owner doesn't run that club well, you could go out of business. And then I, as a fan, suffer. My community suffers. Everything that I have invested in my life for this club suffers. How do we protect against those kind of owners?
Well, I think if you've got a bad owner, you've got a bad owner. That's no different than football's not different than other industries and other businesses. So we've got to be, you know, a lot of it, when you look at the failure of football clubs, it's because the people who are there to regulate, the rules are there. We've not applied them strictly enough. Hmm. Bad people get bad results. And I'm not talking about the big six now, because, you know, clubs in the Premier League shouldn't be going bust. The Premier League as a collective does a fantastic job in redistributing part of what it gets to other parts of football. They do a tremendous job, which doesn't get any, you know, as much voice as on charities and good works and all those things. They do all that stuff. They do an enormous amount of that, right? And again, this just undermines all the work that's gone on for the last 25 years. And all I'm saying is, I think generally, we've done a good job. Tighten the rules, fine. Make changes, fine. But do it from, you know, within, where people, you're part of it. You can't be part of it. And then because you don't like the outcome, say, I don't want to be part of this anymore.
There's a lot that has annoyed me over the last 72 hours, and there's more that will annoy me. Whilst I take the American comparison, and everybody has made it, the American clubs, NFL in particular, because that's the area that I know, but I'm assuming NBA as well, work in quite a socialist environment. You know, we might talk about, oh, there's no relegation, but they work as a collective. There is a collective there. We've talked about collective bargaining agreements on this show. Players and owners working out salary caps, how many games, so on and so forth. And if anybody steps out of line within the NFL, then the NFL come down on them. And the system also means that you shouldn't, Patriots aside, you shouldn't be successful for a very long time, because there is the regeneration of the drafts and so on and so forth. And these American owners who operate over there seem to me to have seen over here, there isn't a socialist structure, there isn't a collective structure, there is a capitalist structure that they can exploit.
It's a view. I've sat around the table for 15 years and I've been involved with, you know, for another 10, with owners of major football clubs across Europe. And what I don't want to say, I believe passionately in our game. Right? It's not perfect. It's not perfect. In 25 years, we've seen a lot of progress and we've still seen things that we'd like to eradicate. But I don't believe breakaways do it. I don't believe fiddling with, I just fundamentally do not believe in sport. Merit is secondary to your fan base or how rich your owner is. And I'm going to talk about two clubs. One is Chelsea, which I was part of. My disappointment with Chelsea is I think he's been one of the best owners for the Premier League that we've had. He's passionate about the game. He's passionate about Chelsea. And I think this last 72 hours has put him in a position which I don't believe he is. He's passionate about that club. He's invested in that club. He's not gone for anybody else to be involved in that. And he's done a great job with it. And it's his money. And if he wants to invest it in that way, it's not debt. If he walks away from it, the club's in a great position. That's a good owner as far as I'm concerned. I've had loads of conversations. It's debt, not how much money you put in is the issue. If you can't afford it, that's when the club gets into trouble. That's when you as a fan lose your club. It's bad management and bad ownership. It's not that somebody puts money in. If you can put money in and afford it, great. That's one issue. Look at the work that the City boys have done around Manchester, around Manchester City, and around what they're doing in the rest of the world. Those two clubs are bigger than what they've been associated with in the last 72 hours. That's what annoys me. That's what really infuriates me. They're bigger, they're better. I heard somebody say, well, they couldn't afford not to be part of it. Well, you can't have a Super League without Man City and Chelsea. So be big enough to accept that and stand up for the rest, which is really what your future is predicated on. That's what upsets me, that everybody's been put in this bucket. If I look at Italian football, it's a shambles. I don't want to be associated with that. It's had no spend on its infrastructure since 1990. World Cup, right? The stuff that they're dealing with today, we stopped dealing with 10, 15 years ago because we've done things about it. Those are the things that annoy me. And equally, I do honestly believe we can all. Well, there's a lot of emotion around now. There's a lot of fury, right? At fans, at the clubs who weren't part of it, to the clubs who were part of it. There's just got to be a massive concerted effort to regroup this quickly.
The other thing in America and working as a collective, in the NBA, after the owner of the LA Clippers made racist remarks, the NBA banned him for life and told him he couldn't own that club anymore.
Yeah.
Working as a collective.
Yeah.
Should EFL and Premier League have the power to say to owners, you can't own this club anymore?
I don't think you can have one without the other. That's comparing apple and pears in my, you know, we don't operate that system. It doesn't mean we're wrong. And I don't think you can cherry pick. I think you've got to continue to evolve.
Should the Premier League have control over who owns their clubs?
We have a fit and proper test. Now, these guys are not fit and proper. I don't have a problem with clubs pushing the envelope. I don't have a problem with fighting your cause because I've done it, so I can't go against it. I have a problem when that, you know, when you feel that you can discard the rest of football or the what makes football what it is today. Let's get back to. We're not doing that much wrong if it's the biggest game and continues to be the biggest game, right? There's a whole lot of stuff. And a lot of that is, you know what, on a Saturday, I used to look at results at 10 to 5 and know where my team was. It's now Tuesday night when that happens, possibly. So things have changed, haven't they? The passion and the emotion around the league, Champions League, is a different experience. Europa League is a different experience. Put all that together, that's the experience of football. And that's what we've been in danger of throwing away. And that's what should be, you know, just get back to the table.
Hey, so I was very interested in your comments about sort of how disappointed you were. Just when you sort of looked at the clubs involved and the proposition that was on the table. And I think that was coming to me as well over the last few days. Loads of conversations I've had, people just pointing out the holes in the business model. The fact, why are our clubs hitching their wagon to Serie A clubs who, as you say, are 10 years behind and have got, their turnover is nowhere near what the clubs involved the big six. So I think that's really interesting, and we could talk for hours about that. You've mentioned Manchester City and Chelsea, and I know, of course, your links with Chelsea, but I think you're probably, well, I don't know whether you're more famous for Chelsea or United, but where do the Glazers go from here, Peter? Where does, you know, Ed Woodward has already said, you know, jumped on his sword. What next? What next for the Glazers and United?
Again, United's one of the major institutions in world football, not just the Premier League, in world football. People know Man United no matter where you go in the world. That has got to be recognised. And with that comes responsibility. That's the reality of this thing. You can't just have it one way. I don't believe the Glazers really know what football is all about. Look, when I joined United, it was a public company. We took it private, right? because I didn't think it was. We didn't think it was right that it was public at that time. It went public for specific reasons, and it was private. But I think all the way through that tenure, we understood what Manchester United was and what it represented. And I think that's what it's lost at the moment. Alex was a key part of that. But, you know, you have to evolve beyond that. When Alex went, there was never going to be another manager that was going to be there for 20 years. So you had to manage through that. But I'm not sure the people that are in that club now know what that club's all about. And that's fundamentally what it is. There's a responsibility that goes way, way, way beyond where you finish up in the league. And if they're not qualifying for Champions League, they've no one else to blame but themselves. They run the club. They're responsible for who they hire, what they do. And just spending a lot of money doesn't mean you're successful. There's more to it than that. Otherwise, it'd be a pretty boring game. It wouldn't be what it is, and there wouldn't be many surprises.
There were probably a lot of people who, within these clubs, were against this at senior level, who didn't want this to happen. And for whatever reason, the owners appear to have gone off on their own, maybe without even discussing this with some quite senior people within the clubs. There are a lot of people at these clubs who are feeling hurt and wounded by the behaviour of the owners. So it's not only trying to bring the game together. I think within some of these clubs, trying to bring the clubs back together is going to be hard.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of mending to do. I think I've always worked with people where not everybody's seen eye to eye. And there's been some interesting, you know, punch-ups in boardrooms or dressing rooms that I've been party to because of that. But what you come out with is a singular position, and then you make it work. That's what the most successful teams do, and that's what the most successful businesses do. And I'm afraid I don't buy. I wasn't party to this, or I wasn't. Well, if you can't influence it, don't take the paycheck.
I'm going to ask you a question about the current hat you wear. I know you're out there advising clubs on takeovers and investments and all sorts, right? I've had a couple of conversations in the last sort of day or two about this Super League talk pretty much bringing a halt to a number of takeover conversations in England, not to mention broadcast deals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Last night, I was getting WhatsApp messages, it's back on.
Yeah.
The deal I've been hinting to you is back on. Yeah. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Peter, this really question is a question really about those teams that weren't part of this. Can they now breathe again? Can they now start to make plans again? Is it all back to normal? Should we just forget the last 72 hours?
I think from that point of view, yes, it is.
Newcastle, is it back on for them?
Yeah, because the uncertainty of, I mean, people were buying into those clubs, whether you're a Championship moving to Premiership or you're a Premiership. People are not buying into those clubs for relegation or seeing that because of what else is happening, their revenues are going to go from 100 to 50. They're buying in for this aspirational, I can be part of that. I can be part of the future. The future's bright. The future's more successful, whatever the measure of success is. And what this thing did is stop all that in its tracks. I'm pretty sure that whether it was the sponsorship agreement, whether it was a broadcasting agreement, whether it was a, you know, bank loan, or it was somebody looking at buying, all that just got put on hold because people don't invest in uncertainty. So to that point, I think it is certain now. I mean, in that there ain't going to be a breakaway. There's going to be a Premier League. And if this was a whole testing the water as to whether and it could be, it's been an abject failure. So let's put it behind us. Let's start healing ASAP, because that's needed. and let's get on with it.
Going forward, will football clubs realise that they ought to ask permission from fans rather than forgiveness?
I wasn't surprised with what we saw from the fans. And it just staggers me that people, if you're going to do it, right? Because you should know what your audience is, whether it's a fan, whether it's a customer, whether it's remote, whether it's on the corner. If you don't know that, you really don't know a lot about what you're running, do you? Right? And the great thing about football, good, bad, and indifferent, by the way, is there's no shortage of feedback. Right? You can get 10 fans in around a table and ask. You might not like it. You might not do what they say. But it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody in football, the reaction we've had from the fans in general, and then of those clubs in particular. Because the reason they're big clubs, by the way, is because they've got more fans.
Yeah.
Right. And what came first, chicken and egg, you know, but that's the reality of it. And when you see, you know, scenes like that on the you know, King's Road, particularly after the year we've had, the 2 years we've had, I mean, again, talk about timing, you know, you couldn't design a worse time, could you?
Peter, thank you very much for coming on. It's been really, really interesting to talk. Hopefully we'll get you on again at some point. Thanks for all your insights.
Thank you, Peter.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Peter.
Cheers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Well, next on the pod, we're joined by the former CEO of Everton, Aston Villa and Aberdeen, Keith Wyness. Keith, let's start first of all. What's your reaction to the last 48 hours?
For me, it had echoes of a number of things that have happened during my time in the Premier League as well. The 39th game, things like that, when there's been disputes, but nothing ever of this scale. And I think that's the thing I'm thinking about, it is just the whole scale of this. It's a real front page story, not just a back page story.
Are you surprised they even tried it?
I'm surprised the way it was executed. But I think, you know, we could talk about what happened in the last few days. But really, I think what's going to happen in the future is going to be very important, and how the Premier League, the other 14 clubs are going to react, and what should be the retribution, if any, on the people who did it.
If you were a chief exec now of one of the other 14... Because it strikes me that they're united, are the 14. They seem to all be pulling in the same direction. Are you fuming? Are you offering an olive branch? What are you doing this morning?
I think there's three things that you've got to be thinking about just now. First of all, you're sitting down with people and you've got to be working supposedly in a united group together, each with an equal share. Since the Project Big Picture came out, the Premier League had put in place a review process to try and restructure things going forward. Those clubs have been involved in that process, and they've been party to some pretty classified information and some very clever thinking. So they've used that for their own ends. So now you've got those six clubs, and the individuals who are working for those owners have now lost all credibility. And yes, you're very angry and very upset with them. And it's very hard to have a working relationship with them. So there's a big issue around that. That means also, I've been thinking about this overnight. Is there a case, a legal case here for what's called tortious interference, where people have been actually breaking contract? I mean, is there a case where they've been taking confidential information, using it for their own ends? I mean, there's some pretty serious things here. Is it bringing the game into disrepute? There are all sorts of personal sanctions here that can go on. So it really is a very serious conversation. Now, having said that, the 14, I think, are in a very, very strong position. And one of the things I would think they might think about is recently there was a big grab for the international media revenue. And it used to be split equally between all 20. And then the big six as such made a power grab and got a bigger share of it. Maybe that should be reversed and go back to the 20 and show that there's some sort of sanction. The other thought, of course, would be from a PR point of view, is there something that the big six could do for the lower leagues in some way to try and, you know, make it look a little bit better for football? And the Premier League would come out of that very well, I think, if the right gestures were made in somehow. But I'm not sure on how that would be formulated. Yes, there's personal situations, there's legal situations, and then there's the whole business structure going forward. But in it all, we shouldn't lose sight. I mean, at the moment, it looks like UEFA and FIFA have come out of this looking pretty good. But let's not forget, they are a big part of the problem. And, you know, they shouldn't get away with what's been happening and everybody thinking that they're the saints that save the day. That's where a lot of the issues are with FIFA and UEFA. And so, you know, that's really, I think, where everybody's got to just not lose track and make these six clubs the focus. There's still going to be a bigger picture we've all got to look at.
Keith, there's some fantastic stuff in there. There's so much to sort of go at. I think it's really interesting that you raise the issue, the sort of personal responsibilities of owners and directors that tortures. Someone has also mentioned that to me. I think a really simple way of thinking about it is, have they acted in good faith? That is in the owners and directors test. Have they dealt with their colleagues in good faith? Have they dealt with the league in good faith? I think there's a very clear case that they have breached the owners and directors test, which is not once when you buy the club, it's every year. And you're supposed to self-report if you think you have breached the owners and directors test. So some of these guys, I think, are going to have to stand down as directors of their club. Whether they have breached, the breach is so heinous that they're going to have to relinquish control of the club, well, who knows, right? But I also think that point you've made about, okay, how do you repair this? And the strategic review, I think, is interesting. And I have had conversations with senior people within the game, particularly within sort of the EFL, that have sort of seen this as an opportunity. Look, we told you the system was broken. Your biggest and best clubs have just shown you that they think it's broken as well. You know, we've been trying to get your attention. We've now got the politicians' attention. Let's do something meaningful and constructive. Now, that to me seems obvious. Keith, you've been there. Villa, Everton, Aberdeen. How much faith have you got, though, right now, that football will grasp the nettle and realise, let's do something meaningful?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned my Aberdeen days, because, again, some of the echoes came back to me. I was part of the group. I led the 10 clubs that actually resigned from the SPL back in 2003. We actually did it. We didn't just threaten it. We actually walked away from the league and left Rangers and Celtic by themselves. And that's an interesting parallel here. And then there was a huge amount of damage to be repaired after that. And I was trying to think of how that played out in terms of the personal interaction. And it was, to be honest, it gave Rangers and Celtic a bloody nose. And it sort of made them keep their aspirations, if you like, limited for at least, I think, probably the next 6 to 10 years, possibly.
That's interesting. So you think that's how long the effect lasted?
It may be quicker, because there may be a change in personnel, as you said, whether owners divest the clubs, whether chief executives, etc., are asked to move on. That will be a lot of the way in terms of whether the damage is repaired. If you've still got the same people there who did this sitting around the table, it's going to be much harder to repair. So there's got to be, as you say, I think there's got to be a bit of a change in personnel. And in terms of the government interaction, I've been asked a lot already last night and today, is it going to go 50 plus one like the German model? I don't believe it will. I think there'll be a lot of talk about it. I don't think it'll get there. You might see a move towards something like an independent regulator. But I mean, if you're looking at things like Ofcom, press regulation, I mean, I think it'll be a pretty toothless regulator, to be honest. So I haven't got much hope. And nor do I really believe that there should be fundamental change other than fit and proper and monitoring those owners and their behaviour a lot better. That's really where we've got to focus. I think part of the great strength of the Premier League is its flexibility and being able to move and to have new owners and to create value and not just have to get approval for every step you take. But there's also got to be, for things like this, it's got to be seen that there's got to be a sanction of some degree. Now, I was trying to think, you know, I've seen John Henry's apology today. I don't think he realises himself the reputational damage that he's done. This, you know, this is a pretty big global story. Kroenke be thinking the same. I mean, this is affecting them. You know, JP Morgan, there is serious reputational damage here. And these guys, you know, they might have thought they had the power of the Football League, which was, the power of the Premier League, which was very attractive to buy into. But they're now seeing how it can rebound on you in terms of power as well. So these guys might think they want to retreat back into their American sports cocoon. And, you know, that may just give them, you know, pause for thought, because it ain't been pretty for them.
You talk about the personnel around the table. Can you separate the CEO from the owners? So Woodward goes, does that make Manchester United easier to deal with? Or actually, does it not really, because the Glazers are still there? Are owners and CEOs linked on this?
Yes, they are. I mean, obviously, certain CEOs, as you say, will have played a bigger role than others, but still, they are the mouthpiece of the owners. And so I was thinking this, you know, I know one of the clubs involved, actually the CEO didn't know anything about it. I know that for pretty much a fact that he didn't know anything about it. And I feel sorry for him. But nevertheless, he was reporting back on the review, the big picture review, back to his owner. So therefore, you know, you're guilty by association. And it is the owner that will tarnish everybody. And there'll be some innocent people that will be tarnished, probably unfairly. But nevertheless, they are working within that ownership regime. And so, yes, you are stuck with the problems that your owner has created.
You talked about what you did when you were at Aberdeen. And it would be fair to say you have been an advocate for change. You know, you were consulting about the 39th game, weren't you, in your time at Everton? And what I find quite interesting in all of this is you can't use the adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, because lots of fans of lots of clubs think football is broken for a whole variety of reasons, Keith. So change is needed, isn't it? I mean, God, not this, but it feels like the sport does need change across the continent, because we see dominance in so many leagues. Right? Competition has gone in so many leagues.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, and that's what we fought in Aberdeen days for was, I mean, if you think at the time what it was, we'd lost the Sky contract at the SPL, and Rangers and Celtic wanted to take 60% of the TV revenue and give the other 10 clubs 40%. And it would have just made the league even more polarised, as you're saying right now. Somehow we've got to get back to the fundamental ideal of the Premier League. And that's why I mentioned the international revenue of splitting things 20 ways. Yes, there should be a merit payment, but actually the more we can split it equally, the better it is. And that's where we've got to go. The Premier League wasn't that broken, isn't that broken?
Are there too many cooks, basically? Within the sport, too many governing bodies, too many people with different opinions to actually get a collective together to fix it.
UEFA and FIFA, to me, are where the problems are, and that's where there are too many cooks. And they've certainly been cooking a lot of strange brews in FIFA and UEFA over the years. Let's be very clear about that. If there was a very clear, decisive governing body from FIFA downwards in UEFA, that's where we got to focus and really getting those right. I think the Premier League has been a very well-run organisation. I had a lot of time for Richard Scudamore. Richard Masters is doing a very good job in a very tough situation. So I don't think the Premier League is that badly run. I think the FA could be run better. I think the EFL is hopefully going to get its act together. So I don't think domestic game is run too badly. To me, it's UEFA and FIFA where we've got to focus on really the change in regulation. And that's got to be, you know, a real focus, not just from Boris and the British government, but there's got to be a lot of countries who put focus on them.
Keith, I've just got two final questions, really. They're both based on your experience in the game. And one is around the 39th game. Just for listeners that don't remember that story, that was about playing literally a 39th game, but abroad. So everyone would get, every club in the Premier League would get an extra game that would be played abroad. And that was to sort of showcase the tournament. And if you think about it, it was... That's the sort of the direction of travel of the Premier League for the last 20 years. It's the sort of story of the Premier League success. taking the product around the world. It's the summer tours. It's really what's differentiated the Premier League from La Liga and Serie A. And it's so anyway, but it was deemed to be a step too far. This idea that you were going away from your local fan, a term that's come around this week is the legacy fan. And you were going to find your new fan. So my first question really is around that. Do you have any sympathy for these guys, these American owners, these, you know, Real Madrid who feel they've outgrown La Liga, Andrea Agnelli, who's stuck in Serie A, that's sort of stuck in the 90s. Do you have any sympathy? How do they realize the power of their brands? How do they monetize that fan over there in Kuala Lumpur or Boston? So that's the first question. The second question is related to the work you were doing when you were at Everton, the stadium, which has been this saga for God knows how many years. Evertonians don't need to tell them that. Now, if you were Everton right now and you were faced yesterday with being the best of the rest, being the left behind, and you were 1 billion quid in, including your investment in the team and your potential investment in the stadium, what would you have been doing? Would you have been preparing the biggest lawsuit of all time?
Great questions. Two things. Firstly, do I have any sympathy for them? The answer is no, because you can still create much bigger wealth, but it's got to be done in a league format. I mean, I was chasing Scudamore for many years to try and create a series of Premier League merchandise shops throughout the globe. Simple things as a, you know, an idea that were then going to be shared equally amongst all the clubs. There's been talk about, you know, the Premier League becoming the Netflix of Premier League of football, TV sport, media sport. It can be done within a league basis, but it can all be shared equally to create a stronger league. Going back to my Aberdeen days, I was trying to tell Rangers and Celtic, don't be greedy, try and create a stronger league because you will benefit, because you will be playing harder games every weekend. You'll be better prepared for your European adventures. And if you have a stronger league, we'll have a better chance of selling it overseas. So everything can be done within a league format. And yes, there can be fights about who gets the share of the income, etc., but do it within a collective. So I have no sympathy for the individuals trying to break up the collective. So that's the first point. Again, I'll go back to the Aberdeen example of Everton, the Everton question you asked me. We were prepared to go for the league to go without Rangers and Celtic. We were quite happy for that to happen. I would have been preparing a huge lawsuit because I think there would have been very clear financial damage that would have been caused. And in a lawsuit, you'd have to show actual damage. I think that would have become pretty clear pretty quickly. So yes, there would have been a lawsuit. But I'd also have been quite happy to have invited six clubs up from the Championship. Or, as has been talked about, possibly inviting Rangers and Celtic down. Yeah, the different format. But certainly six clubs from the Championship, I would have been very happy. I think the fans would have been very happy. My time at Villa, the number of fans that come up to me and say how much they loved playing in the Championship because there were winning games, there were great games of football. I think we could still have a very strong Premier League. It would be a great product. Yes, there'd be a temporary blip in the media revenues, but overall, that'd be balanced with wage demand, etc. I think we'd have had a fantastic product. So I'd be quite prepared to go for it. And yes, I'd have had the lawyers on speed dial, and I would be not frightened of going into the future without the Glazers and the Fenway Sports. I would not be frightened of that future at all.
Keith, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Been really, really good to talk to you. I hope you're well, and we'll see you soon.
Cheers, lads. Keep in touch. All the best.
Thank you, Keith.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, Matt, the story is going to run and run. And I have to say, I don't, rightly or wrongly, I can only say how I feel. I don't feel any celebratory mood today that some people have, because it's just underlined a lot of the things that we've been saying for a very long time on this pod, hasn't it? About greed and the way the way football is going. And I don't see a U-turn in the in the quest for more and more and more money. And actually, as you've tweeted yourself, it's not a victory because the Champions League is still being reformed to what the bigger clubs wanted.
There is a theory that this has just been the most amazing sleight of hand, right? Don't look over here, look over here, right? Whilst we sneak the jewels out. I don't think they're that clever, and I don't think anyone would have done it this way, where there are, you know, calls for clubs being sold and there are people losing jobs and what have you, and people are being humiliated. No. However, have the clubs, the big clubs, got nearly everything they wanted, certainly publicly, 2-3 weeks ago? Yes, they have. Has UEFA on, I'm sure I think what day it was now, on Sunday night, Monday, shaken hands with the rest of the European Club Association, the other 240-odd leading clubs in Europe, and done the deal around the reform of the Champions League, Europa League, Europa Conference League from 24 onwards? Yes, they have. And if you got so angry and so annoyed about the end of football, you've forgotten all that. Well, it's the Champions League going from 32 to 36 teams. It's now in a league structure, this Swiss model, this chess-style tournament. They're going to play 10 games, not six. That's a total of 225 games. Best pass of 180-odd games just to eliminate 12 teams, the bottom 12, because teams that come 9th through 24th then go into a playoff. Then we go into the final 16 and those games that you and I, well, me, a neutral, gets interested in. Right, that's all happening. Oh, there's more. There's this coefficient backdoor in, right? So there's four extra places. Would be nice to go to four champions. No, maybe? No. Well, it's going to go to a fourth place team in probably France, a champion, and then two teams that come fifth, sixth or seventh, which sounds a bit like this season, right, in the Premier League, that have really good European pedigree. So big teams that don't quite make the Champions League have another way into the Champions League. Now that seems, if I was, you know, Mr. Big Six, what do I want out of the Champions League? More games, more cash, another way in. Yeah, that'll do. I'll have that. Now that seems like a pretty sweet deal for a heinous act of treachery. But that's where we are at, you know, 10-ish on a Wednesday morning. And I think they're going to get a bit more as well, because they're going to get a bigger say in the tournament going forward. I think UEFA are about to sell a stake in this new joint venture to a private equity firm that will solve a lot of the COVID problems that they've all been moaning about. So the whole show is set to roll on. Will they try this trick again? I hope not. Can't say forever, but I'd like to think that having blown up the nuclear bomb and it gone horribly wrong, they won't do that again. But
we don't trust them. I wouldn't trust them to not try something again. And that's the problem. Yeah. As Keith said, as Peter said, you know.
But the bluff has been called, I guess. You know, if there is a reason, and I do feel good about this, despite everything I've just said, and actually some of that change to the Champions League stuff, I don't really mind, you know. I don't like the coefficient way in. I wish it was dished out to champions. I don't mind tournaments changing. I don't mind change.
No,
give it a go.
I don't mind change, but I want fair change.
Yes, quite. But what does give me a reason to smile today is that kind of thing that Keith was talking about there. The Premier League didn't blink. The 14 didn't blink. To be fair to him, Alexander Seferin, UEFA didn't blink. They went, do you know what? Go. We'll crack on without you. And I think that's the best thing that's happened this week.
I'm just going to end with two quotes from Athletic colleagues, or the Athletic colleagues, not Athletic colleagues. George Culkin has written an article. The owners of the ESL clubs do not want to lose games. They do not want mess. I want my team to lose games. They should win sometimes, says George. That means we're all alive and anything can happen. It's our game. Let's reclaim it. Let's make football a mess again, our mess. You can read that on The Athletic at the moment. And also, I just want to read out a tweet from our colleague, Carl Anker, at The Athletic. The tweets that he put out yesterday, kickoff times, ticket prices, funding for the women's game, lasting anti-racism initiatives, proper wealth distribution, reforms on tribunals on the poaching of academy players, free-to-watch games, so much more. Keep going. Make the game you want. See you next week. Bye.
The Athletic.